Welcome to 30 Minutes of VOA Learning English, the voice of America's information service for people learning English. Join us now for In the News and American Stories, coming up after As It Is.
Hello again, and welcome to As It Is. I'm Jonathan Evans in Washington. Today on the program, we learn how some artists are taking a new approach to Chinese lantern design. But first, we focus on Thailand and human rights issues in the country. Thailand's military and police have stopped the release of an independent report on human rights. The report examines human rights in Thailand during the first 100 days under military rule. A discussion on the subject was canceled. Organizers feared they would be arrested if they failed to obey a request from military leaders not to hold the event. The meeting was to be held at the Foreign Correspondents Club of Thailand in the Thai capital, Bangkok. But a policeman went to the meeting place and spoke with representatives from three groups: Amnesty International, the Thai Lawyers for Human Rights, and the Cross Cultural Foundation. The policeman said he has a personal copy of the request for each of them. He said the order came from the National Council for Peace and Order. Thailand is currently under martial law. Martial law is control of an area by the military, not the police. Martial law was declared in Thailand on May 20th and is still in effect. There are restrictions on any meetings thought to be political. Freedom of the press has been restricted. So are activities that may be critical of the junta or military leaders. General Prayut Chan-o-cha is the army chief who ousted Thailand's civilian government. He says the junta will work on security throughout the country. He says martial law needs to remain in effect to guarantee order. General Prayut has chosen the members of Thailand's new legislature. The legislature recently approved the general as the country's official leader, or prime minister. 12 members of his cabinet are active or retired officers of the security forces. Pawani Chumsri is with the organization Thai Lawyers for Human Rights. She says it was wise to honor the request to stop the human rights discussion. She says the groups call canceling the event a violation of their freedom of expression. She adds that citizens should have the right to receive information about human rights in Thailand. She promised the report on human rights would be released in the near future. Some international rights organizations have condemned the detention of politicians, activists, and journalists by the Thai military. Most of those held have been released with warnings after a week or less. However, some of those detained face criminal charges. The junta says it wants to return happiness to the Thai people. General Prayut says he promises to have general elections before the end of 2015. You are listening to As It Is from VOA Learning English. Chinese lanterns are lighting up the Los Angeles County Fair in Southern California. visitors can see traditional hanging lanterns from China. But they can also see lanterns made in the shape of animals and famous works of art. These products were created by artists from a Chinese city that is famous for its lanterns. Ann Ball has this report.
At night, visitors to the lantern exhibit pass through red gates and enter a world of light, satin, and steel. These people are surprised at what they saw.
I didn't know what to expect.
This outdoor show at the Los Angeles County Fair is called Luminasia. Lumen comes from the word light, and Asia refers to China. Many visitors expected to see traditional Chinese lanterns. They were surprised to see lanterns in the shape of fish, frogs, and even the Statue of Liberty. Ji Liang organized the exhibit. He is impressed with these works of art.
When I first saw the pictures, I thought to myself, wow, how can this be made? It's very, very fascinating to me.
The unusual lanterns are a specialty from the Chinese city of Zigong. Artists from Zigong are famous for making lanterns. They built each one at the Los Angeles County Fair from beginning to end.
They are trained at a very young age on how to make them.
A team of 49 artists worked for 1 month to build these lanterns. The team included electricians, fabric experts, and metal workers. Song Wei is one of the metal workers. He says he sees the results of his efforts become reality. Everywhere that they finish a job, they feel a sense of satisfaction. It reflects their value, whether it is in China or somewhere else. Song Wei says not many Americans have seen this kind of lantern art. He says it helps publicize Chinese culture around the world and helps other people understand the culture. Jim Henwood is president and chief executive officer of the Los Angeles County Fair Association. He says this presentation is a way for people of different cultures to better understand the Chinese community that lives in Southern California.
How do we bridge the ethnic diversity in a cultural environment that is important and significant here in Southern California?
One answer is Luminasia. Visitors can walk through the outdoor light show and see lantern art from legendary creatures like a dragon and a phoenix. But visitors will also find some of the wonders of the world, such as the Egyptian Sphinx and the Easter Island statues. There are also lanterns for famous places in Los Angeles, such as the huge Hollywood sign. Everyone, including Marvin and Myra Fuentes and their young son, seems to have a favorite.
The big dragon, I think, for myself.
I kind of like the Dodgers stuff. That was kind of cool because it's so big and completely LA.
It seems people of all ages can enjoy this wonderland of lights. I'm Ann Ball.
And that's our program for today. Join us tomorrow for another edition of As It Is. I'm Jonathan Evans. Thanks for listening.
In the News is next, followed by American Stories. You can read and listen to our programs and download MP3s at learningenglish.voanews.com. You can learn with us on Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube at VOA Learning English.
from VOA Learning English. This is In the News. This week, Islamic State militants released a video showing the execution of an American journalist. Stephen Sotloff was captured in Syria in August of last year. He worked for Time and Foreign Policy magazines. His death and the earlier execution of another American journalist, James Foley, have angered many people in the United States. President Barack Obama says the horrific killing of Stephen Sotloff will unite the country and strengthen its resolve in dealing with terrorists. The president spoke on Wednesday during a visit to Estonia. He said the United States plans to build a coalition to, in his words, degrade and destroy the Islamic State militants.
We will not be intimidated. Their horrific acts only unite us as a country and stiffen our resolve to take the fight against these terrorists.
Stephen Sotloff was from the state of Florida. The state's governor, Rick Scott, halted a political campaign event to announce the reporter's death and condemn those responsible.
The people who did this are evil. They are not merely wrong. They are not adversaries. They are evil.
Members of the U.S. Congress have expressed concern about the threat from Islamic State militants. Some members are demanding intensive air attacks. Senator Ted Cruz of Texas is likely to seek the presidential nomination of the Republican Party in 2016. Senator Cruz spoke to a political gathering a few days ago. He denounced the group known as the Islamic State, also called ISIS.
ISIS says they want to go back and reject modernity. Well, I think we should help them. We ought to bomb them back to the Stone Age.
But other lawmakers appear willing to give the Obama administration more time to develop a plan for dealing with the Islamic State. Washington Congressman Adam Smith is a member of Mr. Obama's Democratic Party. He appeared on the CBS television program Face the Nation.
But it takes time to build a coalition. We can't simply bomb first and ask questions later. We have to have the right targets and the right support in order to be effective in stopping ISIS.
There have been few public opinion surveys about the threat from the militants and what the United States should do about it. One recent poll taken before the murder of Stephen Sotloff found Americans divided on the question of whether to intervene in Iraq. Carlin Bowman studies U.S. public opinion at the American Enterprise Institute in Washington, D.C. She says many Americans are likely to see the Islamic State as a threat worthy of some form of military action. However, public support is not likely to extend to the use of U.S. ground troops, says John Mueller of Ohio State University. The American public will have many chances to express itself in the weeks to come. Congress returns to Washington next week. How the United States should react to the Islamic State is likely to be a major issue. Some lawmakers are already urging the president to seek congressional approval before launching a wider military campaign against the group. And that's In the News from VOA Learning English. I'm Christopher Cruz.
Now, the VOA Special English Program, American Stories. we present the short story, The Lady or the Tiger, by Frank R. Stockton. Here is Barbara Klein with the story.
Long ago, in a very olden time, there lived a powerful king. Some of his ideas were progressive, but others caused people to suffer. One of the king's ideas was a public arena as an agent of poetic justice. Crime was punished or innocence was decided by the result of chance. When a person was accused of a crime, his future would be judged in the public arena. All the people would gather in this building. The king sat high up on his ceremonial chair. He gave a sign. A door under him opened. The accused person stepped out into the arena. Directly opposite the king were two doors. They were side by side, exactly alike. The person on trial had to walk directly to these doors and open one of them. He could open whichever door he pleased. If the accused man opened one door, out came a hungry tiger, the fiercest in the land. The tiger immediately jumped on him and tore him to pieces as punishment for his guilt. The case of the suspect was thus decided. Iron bells rang sadly. Great cries went up from the paid mourners, and the people, with heads hanging low and sad hearts, slowly made their way home. They mourned greatly that one so young and fair, or so old and respected, should have died this way. But if the accused opened the other door, there came forth from it a woman, chosen especially for the person. To this lady he was immediately married in honor of his innocence. It was not a problem that he might already have a wife and family, or that he might have chosen to marry another woman. The king permitted nothing to interfere with his great method of punishment and reward. Another door opened under the king, and a clergyman, singers, dancers, and musicians joined the man and the lady. The marriage ceremony was quickly completed. Then the bells made cheerful noises. The people shouted happily, and the innocent man led the new wife to his home, following children who threw flowers on their path. This was the king's method of carrying out justice. Its fairness appeared perfect. The accused person could not know which door was hiding the lady. He opened either as he pleased, without knowing whether, in the next minute, he was to be killed or married. Sometimes the fierce animal came out of one door. Sometimes it came out of the other. This method was a popular one. When the people gathered together on one of the great trial days, they never knew whether they would see a bloody killing or a happy ending. So everyone was always interested. And the thinking part of the community would bring no charge of unfairness against this plan. Did not the accused person have the whole matter in his own hands? The king had a beautiful daughter, who was like him in many ways. He loved her above all humanity. The princess secretly loved a young man who was the best looking and bravest in the land. But he was a commoner, not part of an important family. One day, the king discovered the relationship between his daughter and the young man. The man was immediately put in prison. A day was set for his trial in the king's public arena. This, of course, was an especially important event. Never before had a common subject been brave enough to love the daughter of the king. The king knew that the young man would be punished, even if he opened the right door. And the king would take pleasure in watching the series of events, which would judge whether or not the man had done wrong in loving the princess. The day of the trial arrived. From far and near, the people gathered in the arena and outside its walls. The king and his advisors were in their places opposite the two doors. All was ready. The sign was given. The door under the king opened, and the lover of the princess entered the arena. Tall, beautiful, and fair, his appearance was met with a sound of approval and tension. Half the people had not known so perfect a young man lived among them. No wonder the princess loved him. What a terrible thing for him to be there. As the young man entered the public arena, he turned to bend to the king. But he did not at all think of the great ruler. The young man's eyes instead were fixed on the princess, who sat to the right of her father. From the day it was decided that the sentence of her lover should be decided in the arena, she had thought of nothing but this event. The princess had more power, influence, and force of character than anyone who had ever before been interested in such a case. She had done what no other person had done. She had possessed herself of the secret of the doors. She knew behind which door stood the tiger and behind which waited the lady. Gold and the power of a woman's will had brought the secret to the princess. She also knew who the lady was. The lady was one of the loveliest in the kingdom. Now and then, the princess had seen her looking at and talking to the young man. The princess hated the woman behind that silent door. She hated her with all the intensity of the blood passed to her through long lines of cruel ancestors. Her lover turned to look at the princess. His eye met hers as she sat there, paler and whiter than anyone in the large ocean of tense faces around her. He saw that she knew behind which door waited the tiger and behind which stood the lady. He had expected her to know it. The only hope for the young man was based on the success of the princess in discovering this mystery. When he looked at her, he saw that she had been successful, as he knew she would succeed. Then his quick and tense look asked the question, "Which?" It was as clear to her as if he shouted it from where he stood. There was not time to be lost. The princess raised her hand and made a short, quick movement toward the right. No one but her lover saw it. Every eye but his was fixed on the man in the arena. He turned, and with a firm and quick step, he walked across the empty space. Every heart stopped beating. Every breath was held. Every eye was fixed upon that man. He went to the door on the right and opened it. Now, the point of the story is this. Did the tiger come out of that door, or did the lady? The more we think about this question, the harder it is to answer. It involves a study of the human heart. Think of it not as if the decision of the question depended upon yourself, but as if it depended upon that hot-blooded princess, her soul at a white heat under the fires of sadness and jealousy. She had lost him, but who should have him? How often in her waking hours and in her dreams had she started in wild terror and covered her face with her hands? She thought of her lover opening the door on the other side of which waited the sharp teeth of the tiger. But how much oftener had she seen him open the other door? How she had ground her teeth and torn her hair when she had seen his happy face as he opened the door of the lady. How her soul had burned in pain when she had seen him run to meet that woman with her look of victory. When she had seen the two of them get married, and when she had seen them walk away together upon their path of flowers, followed by the happy shouts of the crowd, in which her one sad cry was lost. Would it not be better for him to die quickly and go to wait for her in that blessed place of the future? And yet, that tiger, those cries, that blood! Her decision had been shown quickly, but it had been made after days and nights of thought. She had known she would be asked, and she had decided what she would answer, and she had moved her hand to the right. The question of her decision is one not to be lightly considered. And it is not for me to set myself up as the one person able to answer it. And so I leave it with all of you. Which came out of the open door? The lady or the tiger?
You have heard the American story, The Lady or the Tiger, by Frank R. Stockton. Your storyteller was Barbara Klein. This story was adapted into Special English by Shelley Gollist. It was produced by LaJuan Davis. Listen again next week for another American story in VOA Special English. I'm Bob Doty.